word on Today FM.
Listeners, says Trump supporters saying he's ahead in the polls are just laying the groundwork to be able to say the election was stolen if he loses, because they'll say he was so far ahead. We have Mary McKeown, Cal Thomas with us, and Larry Donnelly is sitting in studio. So I'll start with you, Larry. Is that part of the bluff maybe that's underway at present?
Perhaps. You wouldn't know what is behind the strategy or indeed behind some of the sentiments of Trump supporters. I do think, however, that there is no doubt that the Harris momentum has stalled. For evidence of that, we only need to look at the polling aggregates. And whereas she had leads and was building leads in some of the key swing states, now it looks as if Trump is just ahead. And Trump's team spin will be that if he's just ahead, or even if he's marginally behind, that actually means he's in very good position, because he typically has been underestimated at the polls. Now, the Harris team are going to say, number one, that some of these polls, they've been flooding the market with polls, Republican-dominated polls, etc., and also that she has the capacity to grow the electorate. That is, that there are young people who haven't voted before who might be energized enough to get out and vote for her. So there are two narratives around this, but to my way of thinking, the reality is the thing is on a knife edge, and anyone who makes a prediction is probably foolish.
Okay, but tell me, 2 weeks out from the 2020 election, did Trump claim to be ahead of Biden then?
He was claiming these sorts of things, but the polls told a different story. I mean, the polls at the moment, at least if you look at the aggregates, and I tend to go to realclearpolitics.com, if you look at the aggregates just this morning, Trump is ahead, albeit very, very narrowly, in all seven key states. And that was a different story a number of years ago. Now, of course, these things are flip-flopping each and every day, but it's very close. And at the moment, the Trump people seem to be, anyway, quietly confident.
Marion McKeown, has Kamala Harris lost momentum, and is she slipping behind just as we get towards polling day?
Honestly, I think that it is too close to say. I think undeniably her momentum peaked around the time after the debate. I think it was, or just before it, when she really was, the Democrats were hugely enthusiastic. There was a relief that Joe Biden wasn't going to be on the ballot, and people really did rally around her. Now, I think she's been running a very solid campaign, but she came into it very late. I think that she is doing the things she needs to do. I agree with Larry. I cannot tell. When I go to Kamala Harris event, there's huge enthusiasm, which is markedly different to what I saw with Hillary Clinton in 2016, where she did get the crowds, but she didn't get the enthusiasm. And I think also then that if you go to Trump rallies, that they're bigger than ever, and the profile is more diverse than ever. So I really, it's so hard to tell which way this is going to go. It could bounce either way, but I do agree that the Republicans are ready and they're all geared up for battle, that whether they, well, obviously if they win, they'll accept, but if they lose, even by a margin, they are not going to accept this.
Okay, what's your take on Kamala Harris's performance, Cal?
Well, first I want to congratulate Larry for sitting in my seat in the studio. I hope you keep it in good shape, Larry. I think she's peaked. I agree with both Larry and Marion. She is taking an entire day off today to prepare for an interview on the Spanish language Telemundo channel. Now, why would you need to prepare if you're 2 weeks out from the election, if you've been vice president for 4 years, if you've been in public office before that in California and in the U.S. Senate? Why would you need to take a whole day to prepare for an interview? Trump is in Miami today. He's flown in all of these Latino business leaders from around the country, all of whom have endorsed him. There's a new poll out today from Reuters that shows one in five black men under 50 are going to vote for Trump. That is enormous. That is huge, because Democrats have had both the Latino and the black vote in their pocket for years. So if those things turn out to be true, and if the polls are right, and the polls are not always right, as we know, then I think Trump is going to win.
What you say to that, Larry, the idea that suddenly it's the people that you would not have expected to vote for Trump who are going to do so?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, it is absolutely remarkable to me, if you look at the numbers in particular with Latinos and the support that they are voicing for Trump. And that's why I think in recent days, Trump has pivoted. And I mean, I don't think anyone could credibly call him a man of God, but he's talking about faith, and he's talking about religion and appealing to religious voters. And of course, there are certain segments, I suppose, Irish people people would immediately come to mind for Irish people in the sense of Catholics in Pennsylvania, et cetera. But he is also speaking directly to Latinos. And if you look at the Latino vote and perhaps what has alienated them most from the Democratic Party, it is the party's shift to the left on cultural issues. And especially when it comes to abortion. Abortion was always going to be a tricky thing for the Democrats. Of course, it motivates progressives. Of course, it gets young people out to vote. Of course, women are angry about the overturning of Roe versus Wade. But push a little bit too hard, and potentially Kamala Harris has pushed a little bit too hard on the issue, and you risk alienating Latinos in particular, but also those traditional ethnic Catholics in places like Pennsylvania who could tell the tale in the election.
What do you say to that, Marion, that abortion has not played the way for Kamala Harris that the Democrats had expected?
I disagree with that, and that's based on speaking to people on the ground, as well as I think polls that show that abortion is the leading single issue that voters could decide on. That about 22% of Americans polled, and again, let's not give the polls too much credence, but they say that if they had to pick one issue that would make them vote in a particular way, that abortion is it. Now, what I'm finding actually is that Kamala Harris is playing this quite well, because her position is all about women's health care, about women who have died as a result of Roe v. Wade being overturned, about these new brutal regulations that have been introduced in individual states, some of which are swing states now. So I think that, and people I've spoken to, in fact, surprisingly, at Trump-related events, young men who say, and one said it pretty crudely, I don't want to be on the hook for child support for the rest of my life as a result of a relationship he has, you know, at a young age. I think that there are concerns that are wider than what we're seeing. I think one of the things for me, one of the metaphors for this election is you have Liz Cheney campaigning with Kamala Harris, and you have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. campaigning with Donald Trump. This is an election where I really think a lot of the old bets are off. The old union vote that Democrats used to rely on, they can't rely on that anymore. Certainly Trump is making inroads with young black men and with Hispanic voters. But I would say young black men are low propensity voters. I think a lot of people will talk and they'll turn up, but will they go to the polls? I don't know. So again, I think that it's all too close to call. I think Kamala Harris could still win it. I think either of them could still win it. And certainly she's not, you know, the peak that she had when she was first, when she first grabbed the nomination, I think has waned. But I think a lot of people, and the cumulative effects, let's not forget, of all the things that Trump has been saying over the past week, the 10 days, the vulgarity, the crudeness, they're like, do you want this guy back in the White House? So I think some of those things are making people, I saw when he was speaking at the rally in Pennsylvania, when he made those lewd remarks about Arnold Palmer, there was a young girl who was probably 7 or 8 years old directly behind him on the riser. And, you know, it's just, I think that some people really, Kamala Harris comes across as sane, as competent, as somebody who's willing to reach across the aisle. And whereas Donald Trump, and I'm not disputing his appeal or that it has broadened, is just offering something that I think a lot of American people might feel squeamish about.
Okay. And there may be parents with children in the car or in the kitchen with them at present who might want to avoid the next couple of moments, because those lewd comments, Cal Thomas, that Marion referred to, is not for the first time, because this has been previously reported that this is one of his party pieces, where he likes talking about the size of the dead golfer Arnold Palmer's manhood, which apparently he saw when leaving a shower at a golf club. What sort of man talks about things like that?
Well, Matt, we've talked about this before, and I think...
No, we haven't talked about that particular issue.
Well, no, not that particular issue. It's not one that I dwell upon. But I think Americans have already made up their minds that Donald Trump is a crude man. He's certainly not a religious man, despite the fact that now he's making some religious remarks. They also do not have high expectations of politicians, which is sad. But you look back in history, and not just recent history, with the Kennedy men and the way they behaved toward women, certainly more recently Bill Clinton. But then we go back many, many years, even to a century or more ago, and we had people in public office behaving badly, saying crude things about members of the other party, and even some members of their own party. So I think that issue has been settled in the minds of many people.
Sorry, Kyle. Sorry, I started. Do you really think that we've reached the stage because politics has reached such a low in the United States that it's okay for a man to get up in front of a full audience, including young children, and start talking admiringly about the size of another man's member?
No, of course not. I'm not justifying it. I think it's terrible. I've written in my columns about his crude language, his denunciation of other people, his demeaning of women, his behavior toward women, his ex-wives, and a whole bunch of other things. What I'm talking about, Matt, is that these things have been settled in the minds of people who are going to vote for him. And nothing he does, you'll remember he once said that if you walked down Fifth Avenue in New York and shot somebody, it wouldn't affect his support. Now, that's very, very sad, but I think it's reflective of the moral erosion in this country where things that used to matter don't anymore. But I think leadership reflects followership. And if people don't care about these kinds of things, then they're going to get leaders who behave and speak as he does.
Okay, Larry, it's interesting that there seems to be belief amongst a lot of Americans that people have already made up their minds, as if there isn't a floating vote to be gotten over the next couple of weeks, as if there won't be people who won't be repulsed by Trump's behavior.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, there, if you look at the polling data, the number of people who have made up their mind is historically high. That having been said, there is a very small number of Americans who, will decide this floating vote that you speak of. And to me, it's going to come down to a couple of questions. It's going to be Trump saying to them, were you better off now? Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago when I was president? And for an awful lot of Americans, in terms of inflation or in terms of, for some of them, what they view to be the cost of society of immigration, the answer is going to be no. And implicit in Trump's question is, you mightn't like me all that much, but you got to stick with me because I beat the alternative. On the flip side, the question that Harris and her surrogates, on whom she's going to have to lean increasingly, the question they're going to put forward is, we cannot have Donald Trump another 4 years in the White House, untethered, not surrounded by experts, surrounded by sycophants. That presents a clear and present danger, not just to the United States, but to the world. Those are the two closing arguments, the two strongest closing arguments the two candidates can make. The question is, which one is going to resonate most with that very, very small cadre of floating voters?
I just realized, Carl, that if you're amongst people who believes that his behavior on stage and talking about Amit Palmer was disgusting, you're probably woke now like the rest of us, Carl.
Well, Matt, I think that we don't care about things that our grandparents and parents cared about. There was a time in America when character was everything. We've talked about this on the show before. Evangelical voters who said that character mattered when it came to Bill Clinton and his behavior with Monica Lewinsky now have thrown that over the side and say it doesn't matter at all. It's only the policies. Well, if these are the two choices, and you want a border that's controlled, and if you want, as Larry says, lower prices again, which were lower for petrol and food and lower mortgage rates, and those are the only two choices you have, then a lot of Trump supporters are just going to hold their noses, put fingers in their ears, and cover their eyes and vote for him. I'm not saying I am. I'm just telling you what their thinking is.
Yeah, Marion, it does seem that, when this issue came up in recent days, many prominent Republicans tried to get away from the character issue and said it's all about the policies.
Well, it was almost comical on CNN's, I think it was
State of the Union on Sunday.
State of the Union, where Jake Tapper was talking to Mike Johnson. He said, you don't have to say it again. It was like, oh my God, I don't want to hear those words. I mean, they were flinching visibly at Trump's vulgarity and his coarseness, but they're still sticking with Trump. And we saw Mitch McConnell, even who we all know absolutely abhors and detests Trump, saying, we're on the same team. And it is reflective, I think, of the Republican Party at large that they are prepared to hold their nose and take, a lot of what they really don't want with the bits that they do want, which is the lower taxes, etc. And I think one of the things we haven't spoken about is the outsized role in this election that people like Elon Musk are playing, and really skirting the boundaries of legality in doing so. But I think it is having an effect. I think that there are a lot.
Sorry, why is he skirting the boundaries of legality in your mind, Marion?
Well, I think because he has he set up this lottery where every day he says he's going to pay $1 million to somebody in a swing state who signs up ostensibly a petition to support the First and Second Amendments, which is freedom of speech and freedom to bear arms, but that they would have to be swing state voters and that they would have to be, registered in signing this petition, they'd also be registering to vote. Now, that seems very, very close to a federal prohibition, which is it's a crime to give somebody an inducement financial to get them to either register or to vote in a specific way. Mm-hmm. Lawyers are looking at it at the moment, and it seems, you know, whether it comes down narrowly on the side of right or wrong, it's very, very unseemly that you have this guy who stands to benefit so much from a Trump presidency, clearly, who has come in and who is spending, you know, tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. And he also has $15 billion worth of defense contracts. Let's not forget another contracts with the government. It all seems that we're in this area where you know, potential oligarchs are coming in and they're also putting their fingers on the thumb for a candidate, in this case, Trump.
Okay, lots to unpack there. And what about the money, though? Follow the money, Larry, because a lot of people are saying, oh, look at the betting markets, and the betting markets are saying that Trump is going to win. I think betting markets are easily manipulated by people with large amounts of money. That can be an effective way of advertising their candidates. So I'm not sure that they're necessarily as strong an indicator. And indeed, there is another listener as well who points out that all of the polls back in 2022 for the midterm elections were suggesting the Republicans were going to win comfortably, and they were all wrong. But if Harris is so unpopular, how come she has managed to bring in such an extraordinary amount of money? Surely the money goes to where they expect the winner to be.
I think it goes back to something that Cal was talking about earlier, the fact that when she came into the race and replaced Joe Biden, it came at an extremely low ebb. It came at an ebb where Democrats were expecting potentially an electoral college landslide in favor of Donald Trump, and they were despondent. Harris's entry into the race no doubt excited an awful lot of progressives who, you know, donated, and especially big money donors. And the question becomes, Matt, I mean, I alluded to this before, but one of the problems that Harris faces, and again, Americans vote on this stuff. I know it's alien to people on this side of the Atlantic, but a lot of them were so excited by Harris because she takes fairly hard left stances on the cultural issues. And the culture wars and being left on the culture wars are what excite Democratic big donors most. And the fact that she has is going to be a factor in people's vote, especially if this thing comes down, if it's very close, if this thing comes down to Pennsylvania, that could be potentially very costly for her. So yeah, she raised an awful lot of money. Yeah, there's a lot of excitement about her. But is that enough for her to get across the line in the states that count?
Political stunts, Cal, like everyone does them. Everyone goes to various photo ops and the rest of it. But are people who were fooled by Trump as a successful businessman on The Apprentice going to be fooled by him pretending that he really would serve fries at a McDonald's?
Well, as you say, Matt, and as I've said, they all do that. But I think that, you know, he not only went to the McDonald's in a staged moment, but he also went to a barber shop. And that was really interesting as well. But Harris is out there in Los Angeles cavorting with celebrities. Taylor Swift, of course, has endorsed Harris and urged her fans to vote for him. I don't think these things have a lot of impact in the long run. However, I think that sending a message like Trump did with a McDonald's stunt, that he's just understands regular people, hardworking people, middle class people, is a more effective message and is getting through to more people of that economic and social milieu than Harris has been able to do. So we'll see. And, you know, this is not going to be over on election night. I remember days long ago when you would find out who the winner was by the next morning after election day. But remember Bush Gore in 2000, that went on until December, where Gore finally conceded after the Supreme Court decided that the in favor of the Florida state attorney general and her decision on whether Bush had won in Florida, which put him over the top for the electoral votes. So this thing could go on for some time. There, as Larry says, there are lawyers spread out for both parties throughout the country in all 50 states, it could wind up in the Supreme Court once again. So it may not even be done before election, before Inauguration Day.
Very briefly, Marion, because we're tight on time. What could Kamala Harris do? Will she get herself on Joe Rogan, for example, and other big listen to podcasts in the next week to try and get the momentum back?
Yeah, you know, I momentum's a tricky thing. If there's a perception that it's gone, I think even it, then it's very hard to get it back because it can sometimes look like you're panicking as well. I think that would be a smart move. The more she gets out there, you know, she presents a good cogent case. I think she comes across much more centrist than a lot of people think that she is. Certainly every tax to the middle in elections, well, maybe except for Donald Trump. So I think that she has got a good message and that she has got a decent appeal. She needs to do more of that. I understand that Bruce Springsteen's going to be getting on the campaign trail for her next week. He did that for John Kerry in 2004 a lot. I remember it doesn't really work.
That didn't work.
Celebrity endorsements don't really work. I don't think they actually have much of an influence. But I'm reminded of something that James Carville said a while ago when we chatted, and he said that it is, that at the end of the day, it's never the big October surprise or the big, and there are 2 weeks left, or the big scandal or the big, you know, debacle at a debate, although it was in Biden's case, certainly. But he said it's more that people get to the end and they, you know, whatever happens, these incremental things, they confirm somebody at the end. It just distills into, are they fit for office or are they not? And that's kind of, it's kind of that feeling thing that they go on, which will have been hardened up, you know, by various things that all happen over the course of a campaign. We'll see. I mean, I do think, as we said earlier, we started this, but it's nobody can tell. But I do think there's going to be a ferocious battle, and absolutely this will not end on November 5th or 6th or 7th.
I've got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Marion McKeown, Cal Thomas and Larry Donnelly. We will do more later in the week.
The Last Word on Today FM.